What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Fast Money starts right now, live from CNBC headquarters in Englewood Cliffs, New Jersey. I'm Scott Wapner, in tonight for Melissa Lee. Our traders on the desk are Pete Najarian, Tim Seymour, Karen Feinerman, and Dan Nathan. Tonight on Fast, a stunning reversal on Wall Street. The Dow with a dramatic drop early in the day, rallying nearly 800 points from the lows. Boy, almost coming all the way back, ending down just a mere 79 points. And after taking out the November lows, the S&P bouncing back to end the day nearly flat as well. The Nasdaq closing the day in the green, up about 0.5%. Pete, what do you make of the action? Is that what a bottom feels like?
It sure feels a lot like that, yeah. I mean, the turn that we had was amazing. And the fact that we saw that spike in the volatility where we got up, and we've been talking about it for a long time. When is volatility going to get one of those absolute explosive days? Well, we certainly got that today. We, as a matter of fact, volatility started coming back before the market started to rise, Scott. So that was something interesting as well. We got up near 26, then we started to pull back, and as we were pulling back, then the market started to catch up with that, and then we saw this big move to the upside. It was NASDAQ, though, that really did lead this first. Whether you want it, the FANG names, the MAGA names, whichever ones you want, the technology side really was what started to push this market back up to the upside.
Bottom in? I mean, is that's the question everybody wants to know tonight. Is that the kind of activity, Dan, that says got a bottom?
Well, you're down asking the wrong guy for
down,
a bottom.
Down
in,
15, down 1,500 points.
Guys,
that was down 1,500 points over 2 days, okay?
Good point. That was a massive, massive intraday reversal, and it was led by the right names. It was led by MAGA, Microsoft, Apple, Google, Amazon. Now, Apple didn't really participate much to the end, but it was down the most of all those guys. Yeah, no, I mean, it was huge, okay? So here's the thing. We might be trading in this range, a couple hundred point range, in the S&P for a couple weeks now. We know we have a budget showdown. We know that we have this Fed meeting on December 19th. There's a couple massive, massive catalysts. So I think we're going to see this volatility for the next couple of weeks until we get some more clarity from the Fed.
But volatility implies just that. You know, saying we got a bottom here tells you that we resolved some major issues that are still very much unresolved. Bottom line here is you've got the sixth test now of 2,600 on the S&P. And meanwhile, you know, the three C's of credit, crude, and
curmudgeon.
Third.
Pete.
I had another three.
I'm not sure what the third is.
Crude, credit, and the curve. Look, bottom line, let's talk about bonds, because I think what turned this market around today was really the bond market. Remember, the 10-year bond and yields went from kind of 305 to 282 on the intraday. Yeah. We were as overbought on 10 years or as oversold on yields as we've been in over a decade. So again, to say that people had overreacted to the other side, I think they had. Obviously, the Fed has been out in the last couple of days and given some people some sense that they're probably more data dependent than they had been.
Journal says, you know, Fed mulling a slower approach. You have the Bostic comments later in the day, which seem to help stocks. What's your view on where we are?
Well, definitely dovish comments. So that was good. But, you know, I think we were down. We reversed all of the positive from China, from the G20, rather, all of the positive from Powell becoming more dovish. We reversed all of that. And I look at where we are in China now at post G20. This arrest, I think that is not going to go unanswered. So yeah. I think that we're in for more bad news on the tariff front rather than good news.
I think that was really a big reason why the market was down the way it was.
Yes, absolutely. Overnight, I believe that.
Totally agree with you. Yeah. It flipped right when that news hit, Scott. We were actually trading positive, and suddenly we've rolled to the downside, and what's the news out there? That was the only news out there. I mean, if you looked around, what else was actually moving the market, and suddenly we were down a couple hundred points from being up over 100 points in the after hours.
What about this whole notion, though, that we're making too much of everything? Making mountains out of molehills.
That's mole a mountain, kind of. I mean, just think about it. That's a pretty aggressive move.
Well, it's a mountain relative to this trade dynamic. And I don't think you can underestimate the trade dynamic. I think there's someone that could be watching these markets and say, sure, the market has got a schizophrenia that we haven't seen for a long time. But when you consider the fact that the entire world has shut down, look, we got ISM numbers out today that were absolutely fine because it's a services ISM. But if you look at the input orders numbers we've had from around the world, everything we're hearing from companies, the Beige Book yesterday, look, you're quickly seeing companies adjust. And everything good we did fiscally, I think, is being unwound. And that,
you asked an interesting question, like people making a mountain out of a molehill. We heard the Toll Brothers CEO say that, well, the media is causing this crisis in housing, talking about weak housing number. Leon Cooperman, what did he say to you at 12:30 today? He said, you guys, as soon as you do that special, we turn. It's like everyone's looking at us and blaming us. It's fine if you guys want to blame me. That's fine. But these guys, what I mean?
I'm saying,
no, but it just
saying,
seems like there's a lot of that right now.
You go
right?
from the yield curve is flat to, oh, my God, we're going into recession tomorrow.
Yeah.
That's the sort of feeling that's permeated
but
the market.
But isn't
the worst case scenario across the board?
So I say this all the time. Okay, so if the consensus is that it's going to take 12 to 18 months from when the yield curve inverts, the twos and the tens, to a recession, why don't you want to hear a contrarian notion that maybe it could happen much sooner than we expect? And I think that's what risk assets have been telling us over the last couple of months, that maybe it's not a 2020 thing, maybe it's a mid-2019 thing. And then when you start looking at global growth, you start looking at the, we're not having these tailwinds from fiscal stimulus anymore, maybe it comes sooner. And why don't you want to hear that?
I think you should hear everything.
Yeah.
But the point that Lee Cooperman was making today, and he came on right at 12, said very positive things about where he thinks we are from a buying opportunity standpoint.
Sure did.
Also thinks that people are too negative. Let's listen to Lee Cooperman, and we'll talk about it on the other side.
In my 50 years of doing this, what do I look at? I look at the economy. I look at inflation. I look at monetary policy. I look at valuation. I look at bonds versus stocks. And everything comes up, saying it's a great buying opportunity.
It was a calming voice today,
yeah,
right? When everybody's
time,
screaming. And yeah, when
bottom.
We came on, we
near
were close to 700
today.
Points down, just off the bottoms of the day.
Yep.
And Lee started to speak. And then suddenly it's almost as if people, everybody listened. Right. I mean, what he came out there with, Scott, was he talked about something I've been hitting on for a couple of days now. Algorithms, the uptick rule and some of that. And I understand people could say, well, you don't have any of those things that are holding you back on the way up. I still think you've got to have something on the markets on the downside to hold that in place, give stabilization to the marketplace. The uptick rule left in 2007. I still think that's something. Lee talked about that as well today. But he also talked about, hey, look, there are some great opportunities out there. And I totally agree with him. As a matter of fact, I bought one of his names today. I'm going to be pitching that later on tonight. But it's really interesting
nice
to see. I try to tease these things out. But it is amazing because I think his calming voice came in and said, hey, look, there are opportunities being created by the fact that we are seeing these massive moves to the downside.
Let's not forget, Kara, buying the dip has not worked of late, right? You've had all of these gyrations, right? In the last 2 months, all of a sudden, buying the dip hasn't worked.
Right.
Lee suggests that now's the time to actually buy the dip.
Uh-huh.
Is it going to work this time?
Well, I mean, Lee's outlook is long term, and he doesn't really care, I think, if he has a lot of volatility in his portfolio in the short term, right? So I think he'll probably be right. I mean, I'm long. I'm always long biased. And, it's been a difficult 2 months. But it's interesting you listen to Jamie Dimon or you listen to Brian Moynihan the other day talking about the strength of the economy.
Everybody who came on today from D.C.
Right.
with Becky,
yes.
One after the other.
Very positive. I think, though, that tariffs and trade is what moves this market. I really do. And I do not think we are in the clear at all. And I also think uncertainty moves this market. If we had a tariff deal, trade deal, even if it wasn't a great deal,
I also think
that would be better for the market.
Yeah, but I think if you think, again, about positioning and where are people complacent and maybe people are overreacting, certainly on a minute and a day-to-day, look, we traded off on effectively 2 days. So from the peak of the first trading day after Thanksgiving to the lows of today, we traded off 6.5% in essentially two sessions. Mm-hmm. That's an oversold condition. I don't care what anybody says. Of course, at some point, people need to step in. But I just think if you consider the dynamics and back to technicals, I'm not a technical freak. I use them at least as a tool along with everything else. And to be clear, we broke down technicals on 2 to 3 year trends in a couple of major asset classes. The DAX today broke an 8 year uptrend. You've actually seen, as I talked about, oversold conditions that really indicate you could have
oversold isn't reason enough for a bounce, right? You need a catalyst. And maybe we got a confluence of catalysts today. It's Cooperman.
It's
Diamond.
It's the Fed.
It's the Fed.
It's the Fed.
Everything is sort of a calm, hey, I think maybe we're making too much, their opinions, of an economy that's falling out of bed, a Fed that's getting too aggressive. The trade skirmish that Diamond said, hey, listen, not a war.
I think yields told us this over the last couple of weeks, that a more dovish Fed is not particularly bullish for equities. And I really believe that. And I think that you may have this kind of knee-jerk reaction into December 19th off of this older oversold condition. But I'm not sure once we get to December 20th, that's going to be a real bullish thing if they wait in December and push it out.
All right. We mentioned Jamie Dimon, the J.P. Morgan CEO, sitting down with our own Becky Quick earlier today, commenting on the markets.
There are a lot of things happening that may even come together the wrong way in late 2020, 2021. It's possible, you know, we've had, and this is another very important thing, 20% growth over 10 years. It should have been 40%. That anemic growth is part of the reason you have lower capital expenditures, that we didn't create enough high-paying jobs, that people didn't have enough opportunity. And it's like, not the tail end of the cycle, but it's possible this acceleration we're seeing is traditional for the last third of a cycle. So it's possible we've got 3 years left.
Booyah!
Oh, there you have it. We have a Cramer alert for more on that and this wild day. Let's bring in CNBC's Jim Cramer. He's live from the Mad Money studio tonight. Jim, you got the positive comments there from Diamond. I hope you listened to Lee on the halftime report earlier. What do you make of the way things unfolded today?
I thought Lee really helped the market. I was watching and seeing how the market just kind of bottomed because you needed a calming voice. And Lee's basically talking about the mechanics of the market not working well and then creating some value. But also what he talked about was driving people away. And that's what the stock market does. And the SEC doesn't view it as its job to figure out whether it's a level playing field between individuals, institutions, or fast money or slow money or algorithmic money. And it's a shame because it used to be a great way to make money. And it's just consistently driven people off or made them think that you only can do ETFs. And it's really a shame. Jamie, I think Jamie's a great banker, but there is weakening housing. There's weakening electricity use. There's weakening autos, weakening construction. We got weakening chemical, weakening paper. We got weakening oil. Altogether, yes, there's some good, but we have to admit there's some bad. So the idea that the Fed does one and then waits, I'm fine with. But I'm not fine with the idea that the Fed says we just got to keep going because that's too much weakness. It really should be a little more measured. The Fed has to be a little less rash. No one likes to criticize the Fed. I don't understand that at all. I mean, we're perfectly willing to say that a Green Bay coach should be fired, even though he's in a bunch of NFC championships and he's a Super Bowl winner. But we can't say anything about a Fed chief who on October 3rd comes out and says the wrong thing, that the economy is really strong. It may be the weakest moment. I'm sorry. These are people who put their pants on one leg at a time. We have every right to be able to criticize them and we should not let them just go by idly.
They know nothing
when they often know nothing.
Today feel like a bottom to you, Jim, the way that stocks rebounded by 700 points?
Let's put it this way. I like the fact that obviously the mechanics of the market were weird in terms of the day off and what happened with the futures. I was disturbed by the fact that there must be something really going wrong, frankly, at Huawei, that the Canadians would do our bidding. I mean, this must be some serious indication of guilt there. That helps the cold warriors in the White House, not the trade warriors. But you know what? Let's talk about Facebook. Wait, you know, Facebook has got to be the most reviled stock of our time, right? And there was a big downgrade, and the stock was really bad, and the stock rallied. You know, when stocks rally on downgrades, that's a positive sign. But yes, if the Fed says the wrong thing and the president's a little peripatetic, that's a great understatement. There's a lot of things that seem to make the algos go wrong. So you got to pick your spots. I mean, Facebook was probably proved to be a great buy today. The fact that Apple didn't finish at its low was odd. The fact that Broadcom reported a monster quarter after the close is probably the company that's most involved and most in the crosshairs with China after Huawei. I don't know. These were positives. These were positives. But the most positive thing was your interview with Lee, because they don't want to get rid of, they don't want to bring back the uptick rule. They being the institutions that love to be able to go in and out of stocks. There's too much money being made betting against the individual and not and betting with the institutions. And I hate that, Scott. Yep. That's why it's a great interview.
No, thank you. In light of all this, Jim, what do you have coming up in about 45?
OK, I have probably the best acting stock in America today, which is Yum. It's been a buy every time it's down. U.S. Concrete, we'll talk about a great read on the economy. And then I've got a stock that's down a remarkable amount that was one of the hottest stocks in the market, Ollie's Bargain Outlet. And I've got to tell you, Bill Sandbrook, that's a tough one. U.S. Concrete was up. But you listen to Creed and you listen to Butler and you're going to want to buy their stocks, and I encourage you to do so. And we got to find out what happened in Canada. Scott, I mean, that was just an episode of 24, maybe season 5 or 6.
Yeah, I suspect we're going to find out more in the days ahead.
She's released her own recognizance. Can you imagine what will happen with these stocks?
Yeah. J- Jim, we appreciate it as
Thank
always.
You,
we'll be with you top of the hour. Again, Mad Money, 6 p.m. Do not miss Jim's show, talking all about what happened today and where we may go from here. Coming up, it was the arrest, as Jim was saying, heard round the world. The CFO of a major Chinese tech firm taken into custody will tell you why it shook the global markets. Plus, a top strategist who has been calling for a big year-end rally now said it's dead on arrival. What made him change his tune? He'll be here to explain. We're live from CNBC's global headquarters in Inglewood Cliffs, New Jersey tonight. And there is much more Fast Money right after this.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. Saving, researching, investing. Now you can take those investments to the next level with Yahoo Finance, our sponsor today. I have an investment account with Schwab and a 401k with Fidelity, and I use Yahoo Finance to consolidate them, so it's incredibly easy to manage. They've been helping great investors like you for over 25 years. So whether you're a seasoned investor or just looking to level up, Yahoo Finance can simplify things, putting all your tools and data in one spot. Yahoo Finance takes a 360-degree look at the financial news cycle, from breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, and customizable charts. They've got you covered. You can see all of your 401k and other investments by securely linking your brokerage accounts. Yahoo Finance gives you insights and helps you see your wealth in its entirety. That big picture perspective helps smart investors become even better. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor. YahooFinance.com, the number one financial destination. YahooFinance.com. That's YahooFinance.com.
Back on Fast Money, Broadcom soaring after beating earnings after the bell. A bright spot in what has been a rough few months for the chip stocks. Josh Lipton's in San Francisco tonight with the details. Josh.
Scott, so that Broadcom call is really just starting here. CEO Hock Tan is on the call. Interesting. Going forward, he says, in terms of disclosure, they're going to plan to do away here, Scott, with quarterly guidance. Instead, Hock Tan saying they're going to be moving to annual guidance going forward. He says that more accurately reflects how he manages the business. As for the print itself, Scott, I did check in with Bernstein's Stacey Razgon just for his quick take. Now, he is a Broadcom bull, and here's what he liked in the print, he told me. Gross margins way above. 2019 guidance looks really solid, he says. Implied EPS by his math, $23.50 for fiscal 19. That would be higher than the street was looking for, and a massive dividend raise. We should also mention that Broadcom added $6 billion to its buyback plan. Other chip names were under pressure today. You look at the SMH, it did finish in the red. And the analysts were kind of busy seeing how much exposure their names, for example, had to Huawei, given the arrest there of that CFO. RBC's bottom line, at least today, clients were saying, listen, they saw this as an incremental headwind. More material issues, they said, include slowing demand trends, the trade war. The SMH did close well off its lows of the session, though still on track here for the worst year since 2011. Scott, back to you.
Yeah, Josh, thank you very much. Let's talk these chip stocks. You could look back and say in many ways that the chips helped lead you into this, right?
No doubt.
They fell out of bed first. Big time, led you in. Do you need them to lead you out for confirmation that, in fact, we are out?
Well, they've certainly been both the easiest line you can draw to the techs, you know, pushback and the acrimony. If you look at techs, they basically have pulled back almost 9% in 3 days relative to the market that pulled back 6.5%. I mean, they trade with a beta, and ultimately you've seen that since June. So they've underperformed. If you look at some names like Intel, though, Intel's actually outperformed the market after it kind of bottomed about 2 months ago. And I think when you look at a more diversified chip play and a company that has a great balance sheet and actually on the earnings on a multiple basis is a much smarter play in chips than some of these high multiple stocks. And that's why it's outperforming.
Pete, you watch these stocks close.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this forecast is amazing, right? I mean, they've raised it by $2 billion to $24.5 billion for 2019. Nobody seems to be screaming, though, that they cut back and they're not going to give quarterly anymore.
But they're
going
for the full year. Guidance, though.
Right. But I mean, everybody's all over Apple for saying, hey, you're not going to give us units anymore, but you'll still give us revenue, of course. But, you know, they don't want to give units anymore. Everybody screamed about that. I'm just pointing that out because I think that's something that slipped underneath. I think Tim's 100% right with Intel. When you look at this name, they still need to tell us who the CEO is going to be, though. Who's going to lead?
Taking a long time.
I know it. I'm with you.
And that stock was cut to a sell yesterday.
Yes. And yet, look at it today. It was $2 off the lows from earlier this morning where it closed at 48.50. So a nice move, I think, out of Intel into these earnings. And I expect to see that up tomorrow as long as Avago can hold on to this.
All right. Tech may have made a comeback today, but one trader believes the group isn't out of the woods just yet. Let's bring in Joel Kalina. He's the head of technology and media trading at Wedbush, coming to us tonight from Toronto. Joel, welcome. It's good to talk to you tonight.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
How come you don't think tech's out of the woods?
Well, I mean, obviously, I don't know. I mean, whatever Hawk Tan pulled out of the hat is pretty impressive. I don't think anyone saw that coming. And what he's seeing from the semi-end market is clearly not reminiscent or similar to what his competitors are seeing. You know, data points continue to deteriorate across the board. You listen to management speak over the past few days, whether it was at Barclays Tech Conference or NASDAQ's conference in London. There's a few things that are certain. There's a lot of there's no visibility as far as tariffs go. And regarding, you know, outlooks heading into 2019, there's a lot of uncertainty. Everyone wants to talk about 2020 and beyond. But I'll tell you what, it seems like a lot of the CEOs and managements from the semi companies are banking on hope that things will improve. What we've been seeing over the past kind of 6 to 7 weeks, you know, Microchip first flagged the issues in mid-August, that inventory levels are on the rise, and we're seeing cracks across multiple end markets that just were bulletproof for pretty much 5-6 years, whether it's automotive, industrial, decelerating data center spend. There's issues here that just weren't around at, you know, for the bulk of this bull market cycle that we witnessed for 7 years.
Right.
And it's starting to unravel a little bit.
And more broadly, though, I mean, the price action today was fairly interesting, and especially in the Amazons, Facebooks, Googles. You don't take any of that as solace about where we could be going from here?
Well, as far as tech, I mean, I think, you know, there's definitely pockets that are firing on all cylinders. And I think you look no further than the cloud SaaS pocket of the sector. We had great numbers last week from Salesforce, Workday, Splunk, and then this week already from Zscaler, MongoDB, Octane, just to name a few. I think, you know, the secular shift to cloud is still relatively in its early innings, and you're going to see a further shift, you know, to that pocket of tech as the digital transformation is still underway. So I'm sitting here, if you look at the semiconductor space, why try to catch falling knives when you have CEOs that really can't predict, you know what they're going to expect in 2019.
Yeah, but I'm trying to go beyond the semi stocks. If you look at the way that the FANGs came back, you know, Apple may not have had as good of a day as some of the others, but the valuations of these stocks have come down as the market has gone through this correction. You're telling me that none of these are worth a buy here?
The semiconductors, no. I think there's a lot better names to own. You want to look at the large cap space.
I'm
like Apple in the 170s.
Stocks. I keep talking about. I'm trying to get to the FANG stocks.
FANG stocks. I think, you know, to me, Facebook is still kind of uninvestable given the regulatory overhang on the stock and a lot of execution issues from Zuckerberg. But yeah, Amazon's one of the most disruptive companies in the world. Google's still relatively cheap. I think you'd definitely be nibbling on the long side of those names. And then kind of elsewhere, maybe even some of these Chinese names are getting pretty flushed out. You know, Tencent, Alibaba, those type of names, you know, they're a lot less owned now than they were 2-3 months ago. And I think you look at those names within the large cap complex or the cloud names, Salesforce, Microsoft, Red Hat, those companies are executing and still, like I said, firing on all cylinders.
Yeah. Appreciate it very much. Joel, thank you. Joel Kalina from Toronto. What do you think?
Well, I actually thought Facebook was the most interesting today. I mean, those articles out this morning read terribly. And the market was obviously down. It wasn't down that much more, or maybe even a little bit less than some of the other FANGs, and it rallied really strongly. I mean, that is just a crescendo of bad news there, and yet it hung in. So, I mean, I was talking in my book. I'm long Facebook. I'm long Alphabet. I think you guys were both saying those need to have been leading us out if we are going out. Then, but I think the semis need to follow for us to really get out.
I think what Joel's saying is you want to avoid these commoditized kind of tech stories that actually don't have great visibility. And, you know, when you look at Broadcom, when you look at who their customer concentration is, Apple at 9%, it's Foxconn at 9%, which Apple is their biggest customer, and then it's Huawei at 6%. I think you want to avoid that, especially with this guidance change. But one thing he said that I think this is really important is these cloud names, this is really important. They're high margins, right? You have all these companies, enterprises globally that are transforming their businesses. You also have governments. Okay, so these are companies with 70-80% gross margins.
Salesforce
and
killed
this
it.
Is this that, that's what I'm saying. This is going to be a secular shift. So your buy list should be on those sorts of names, right?
The problem with that is I agree with everything you're saying, but those are the big multiple stocks. I mean, the stocks that make more sense in this environment are really a Google. Or, you know, I think the most important stock today, at least if you want to start calling a turn, was Apple. I mean, Apple traded down to this 171 level, which, you know, that's 26% off the high, almost like that.
Yeah,
for
another
the stock
pile
that was
on price
to be,
cut today.
Yeah, I mean. and thanks very much. After 25%, you know, when you were probably at 280. You know, look, I just think if you want to talk about a stock with a multiple that is very defendable, especially when and their capital markets activity is spinning out $50 billion in cash flow a year. What happened to sentiment in that stock? You talk about how, you know, people are you know, that is the one that is emblematic of how the market sentiment has changed so much.
Yeah. All right, coming up, what's got Wall Street so offsides as we head into year end? A top strategist from Wells Fargo is going to explain what he's gotten wrong, why he's right now. Plus, Pete Najarian is stepping up to the plate to give us the one beaten down housing stock he says is about to break out. You're watching Fast Money live from our headquarters, our CNBC Global headquarters in Englewood Cliffs, New Jersey. Much more right after this break. Welcome back to Fast Money. What a year it has been on Wall Street, leaving many of the top strategists offsides with their year-end S&P 500 targets. Our Bob Pisani joins us now from the New York Stock Exchange with more on that. Bob?
Many still relatively bullish, Scott. The S&P 500 swung in a 75-point range from the opening to the close today, the low. The Dow moved in an almost 700-point range from high to low. Those are remarkable moves. Positive comments from the Fed's Ralph Bostic, IMF's Christine Lagarde, Wall Street Journalist story that Fed officials are becoming less positive on how fast and how far the central bank will need to go were all a factor in the turnaround today. Still, of the three biggest market concerns, only fears of an aggressive Fed have lessened in the last few weeks. The other two major issues about tariffs and trade and about a global slowdown, they've not only not been resolved, there are some signs those concerns have increased. So Wall Street strategists, though, remain very convinced the markets are going to come well off their lows, in some cases significantly off their lows. Take a look here. All the major strategists have year-end targets that are above today's S&P close. That was 2695. Canaccord Genuity, for example, expects the S&P to close at 3200, a nearly 19% gain from today's close. UBS, 3150. That's a 17% gain from today's close. J.P. Morgan, 3,000. BMO, 2,950. And the least bullish here is Goldman. They expect the S&P to close at 2,850. But even that's a 6% gain from where we are today. 2019, of course, is a bit more problematic. Remember, Scott, Michael Wilson, Morgan Stanley's chief equity strategist, he made waves recently by calling for the S&P 500 to end 2019 at 2,750. That's just barely above where we close today. Back to you, Scott.
All right, Bob, thanks so much. Bob Pisani, New York Stock Exchange, because there's a big discrepancy on what some people think earnings, Tim, are going to be in 2019.
Right, and if consensus right now is about up 7% on earnings for 2019, there's been some people dialing that back. I think, you know, you have to. And the relative basis here is also to what extent is guidance changed dramatically from when that 7% was set.
Our next guest has a 2018 year-end target of 2950. We're about 10% away from that level now. And now he says the Santa rally is dead on arrival. Let's bring in Chris Harvey. He's the
dead
head of equities,
Santa? Chris,
at Wells Fargo.
Wow.
Thanks for being here.
I wouldn't say it's dead on arrival, but earlier today it looked like Christmas was canceled, looked like Santa got caught in customs, and things look a little dicey.
So tell me where you think we are now, because we had the 700-point comeback, and I'll ask you the question I asked all at the top. Was that a bottom? Is that what
so,
it feels like?
So we think we've been scratching out the bottom. What we've been saying to clients and what we've been talking about, there's value on the ground now, right? You've had a massive de-risking. You have sentiment that's horrific. But one of the things that we don't have is we don't have liquidity coming out of the system. We have it at the margin, but what we really don't have to worry about, and the way things fall apart is when liquidity comes out of the system. The banking system, we can argue about what multiples are, what the valuation is, but the bank balance sheets are quite good. And so that still keeps us bullish. Please.
Hold on. We went from 2950 to Santa's dead on arrival to now actually we're bullish again.
Well, we've always been. So if you remember, we've called this a trader's market for some time. So above 2900, we said you have to de-risk. Now that we've come back down, we want you to re-risk.
But you said on November the 1st, so it's, you know, for argument's sake, we'll call it a month.
Yep.
Right? We're in for a monster rally.
Right. So
then you came back and said that, you know, things have changed. You've taken that rally idea off the table.
So the monster rally, we still think things go higher. We still think things are good here, right? We're looking very smart. On Monday, things are up 6% from that call. On Tuesday, not so much. And what we're doing is we're starting to run out of room, okay? So, but at the end of the day, is there opportunity here? Yes, there's opportunity. Do we think things go higher? Yes, we do think things go higher. Can we make it to our target? We're running out of room. So, but at the end of the day, that's not the big issue. If you buy today, will you be happy on 12/31/19? And we think you will be.
Let me ask you, when you talk about liquidity, I'm unclear, you're talking about liquidity in the markets, or you said liquidity in the banking system or credit market? What are you talking about?
So when we talk about liquidity, it's really credit. Do you have access to capital, right? Because when recession, when things go haywire, usually what happens is access to capital disappears. The credit markets are still open. We had $40 billion of issuance. We had convert issuance. But more importantly, when things get tough, when things get a little bit dicey, can the banking system still provide that capital? And they can. The bank balance sheets are as good as we've seen them in a long, long time.
Yeah, but Amy Dimon was asked directly today by Becky about that very issue of the credit markets.
Yeah, but he was never going to admit it. And we're seeing credit issuance scale back pretty dramatically. And when you think about it, whatever the Fed tells us on December 19th, they're still tightening. They're letting hundreds of billions of dollars of credit roll off their balance sheet. And that is tightening conditions. So Jamie Dimon did say we are seeing slower loan growth or that sort of thing. I mean, we've heard that over the last couple of months. I just don't see what the catalyst is. The bank stocks told you today, they really didn't kind of come back today. I don't think we're going to have a great 2019 year for investing in bank stocks.
So the point is not investing in bank stocks. Again, we can argue about what the multiples are.
Your point is the health of the overall economy and liquidity behind
it. When things get difficult, can they provide, can access to capital happen? Can the companies that need it get access to capital? And the answer is yes. Usually at this point in the cycle, banks' balance sheets are upside down and toxic. That's not
the case. What do you think Citigroup down 10% in four trading days is telling you about liquidity and about the prospects for them to be lending? I just don't
understand. Although, Dan, that could have been 50 other stocks.
Well, I think it's Deutsche Bank related more than the U.S.
They've got that international exposure that many of the other banks don't have the same sort of a thing. Yeah, absolutely.
My question, though, Chris, would be more about, I think one of the other things you said near the end of November is you actually got the sense that something along the line, the argument that everyone had finally maybe de-risked and this was the reason that things were actually looking good. It was a positioning argument. I still get the sense that there's still a lot of complacency. A lot of strategists are still very bullish on not only year-end, but where we go from here. And I don't think that the repositioning has been that extraordinary.
Strategists may be very positive, but the buy side is not. When you talk to the buy side every day, the sentiment is horrific. Now, let's get back to liquidity. What we've seen is de-risking. Stocks have gone down. Yeah, things aren't great. But a lot of times that de-risking has been a demand for liquidity. What happened is not unsimilar to what happened in 07. In 07, you had people levered to value in a large way. In the middle of 07, it cascaded out, and you had a big demand for liquidity. It's pretty similar to what happened now. People were levered to growth, and then that started to roll over, and there was a cascading out. When the opportunity comes up related to non-fundamental reasons, we think that's a great opportunity.
Let's say we're not going to get to 2950 on the S&P between now and the end of the year. Okay, great. Where can we get?
So I think we can easily get to 2900. So not that far away. Again, we've had a six-point swing in a matter of in 24 hours, at 24 hours of trading, or a little bit more than that. So you can easily have that positive news come back into the marketplace. That's not a surprise. We're sitting around 2,700. We weren't sitting around. We tested 2,800 not that long ago.
You're talking 200 S&P points. There's time for that?
It certainly is.
You guys agree with that? No one?
It's possible.
By end of year?
I don't want crickets. I want a debate.
I tell you what.
That's a big call.
Let's talk about
big call.
What are the biggest concerns for the market? So let's go after this. It's the Fed. It's trade. And obviously, as a function of both of those things, it's growth. There's no way we're going from 3% global growth, which is probably where we've downshifted, 3.2, 3.3 right now from 4.3 to negative growth next year. Is the S&P now priced to a place where I think it's reasonably attractive? Yes, you can make that argument. The equity risk premium is still very attractive, but that's a long way to go because trade is going to be a daily headline from here on out.
I think the issue is the trade skirmish, right? Everybody talks about the war, and all of a sudden you hear Jamie Dimon.
Why is this a war, by the way? Why does it have to be a skirmish?
Well, a skirmish, it absolutely is. It absolutely
is. Are you disagreeing?
So what I'm saying is I think Jamie Dimon said the uncertainty factor, and if there's a 90 days, and he said today, if you listen to him very closely, he didn't think it's going to get resolved in 90 days either. Could it improve? Yes, absolutely. So do we get to 2,900? Sure seems like a long shot to me, so I would say no to that. But it doesn't mean we can't trade higher. It just means 2,900 seems like a pretty big jump until we get something resolved at some point in time.
I know, Danny, you don't because you pretty much said as much.
I just don't know what is going to lead. I don't see what the catalysts are. I think that the trade, the broader issues, these are going to take quarters, if not years, to figure out. I think that the slowing that we're seeing globally, you talk about Deutsche Bank. You're telling me that Citigroup's down 10% because of Deutsche Bank. Deutsche Bank's down because it's really their balance sheets in a really bad spot, but it's also reflective of what we're seeing in the European economy, right? Yes. This is one of the biggest banks. So I just don't see that the U.S. is going to drag the rest of the world out of this when we have so many headwinds right now. And I think the bank stocks have been telling us all year. I think cyclical stocks like semiconductors are telling us like this. I think the, you know,
he's
industrials.
He's wagging his finger at us.
No, I
don't
know. But I've been saying this for months, and it just seems pretty obvious.
Thing that could happen.
At least it's not the other finger.
Right.
Yeah. It feels like it.
One thing that could happen, and we've seen this bond rally and equities down. You could see a reweighting at the end of the year, money out of bonds into equity, given how much they've moved relative to each other in the last
bonds
very short.
Bond. There's no question about it.
That's a little wagging towards you there, big boy.
Chris, thank you.
Thank you.
Good talking to you. Chris Harvey joining us tonight. Still ahead, we have much more on this wild day on Wall Street. We'll tell you which stock Pete Najarian says looks like it could be a bargain buy right now. Plus, media stocks, a bright spot in today's market. AT&T CEO Randall Stephenson sitting down with Becky Quick earlier today. We'll bring you the comments right after this. Welcome back to Fast Money. Wild day on Wall Street. The Dow down more than 780 points at the lows of the session before staging a major comeback, ending the day down just 80 points. With today's move, the S&P 500 roughly 8% off of its late September high and on track for its worst quarter in 7 years. Nearly half of the index in a bear market, down 20% or more off of their respective highs. But if you're looking for something to buy today, Pete Najarian has a bargain for you. He's at the Telestrator, the Plasma, for his fast pitch. Pete?
Well, earlier today, when we were talking with Lee Cooperman, and you were there, Scott, Halftime Report, he was talking about one of these names. This is Lennar. And that started triggering for me, and we saw option activity. So suddenly, I got a lot more interested. First Lee, then the options. It got me into this stock. I actually bought this stock today during the show. So take a look at this. The stock is cheap, and he pointed this out as well. He pointed out the fact that single digits, he said 6 or 7. It might be a little bit more than that in terms of PE, but it's a very inexpensive stock. It's trading under book value. Stock was in the 70s. Now here it is in the low 40s. So I think that's an opportunity. But that's not the only reason. I think a big reason is you take a look at this growth. If you go over the last 5 years and you take a look at where they were in terms of revenue, it's gone from about $6 billion to over $20 billion. So that's incredible growth to me. You look at the earnings also. This is a company that's going to, next year, $6.60. They were $2 5 years ago. So they've got some growth out there, I think, into the future. The other thing is, this management team, and this has been a long-run management team, a new CEO, but he's been with the company a long time. Take a look at what they've done with acquisitions over the last couple of years. They made their biggest one just this year. I think that's something that they needed to do. They've been spending the money in the right places. They're already bringing down some of that debt that they put out there to make this purchase. I think this is a company that over the years, because of the acquisitions, makes them stronger. This is a name that's been beat up. I agree with Lee. I took a look at all the different aspects that I like here. I had to get into this name. I like it.
Yeah, interesting timing. Kara, you got a question?
Yeah, I got a question for you, Pete. Yeah. Rates have come in a little more than a little bit, a lot. How important is that to them? And what if they head back up?
Yeah, that would be concerning, Karen, because obviously that's something that I think everybody talked about when you were talking about some of these housing numbers. When they've gotten weaker is when we've seen those rates start to rise back up again, and that's been the pressure. I don't know, Karen. None of us actually have a great handle on this, but if we're in this area where we are right now, something under 3, I think that's going to help a lot in terms of what's going on with a lot of what's been going on in the finance side of the housing market.
Pete, I think the valuation's getting very interesting here, so I'd like to lean with you that direction. At the end of their third quarter numbers, though, they told you they're seeing softness in demand. What do you do with that? And again, is that enough? Is that offset enough by the valuation?
I would say that the demand softness was all, Tim, to do with what we just talked about, rates. I think as we've seen some of that pull back, I think that softness actually becomes a strength once again.
All right. No more questions. Time to vote. Are you buying Pete's pitch on Lennar? Yeah, Tim?
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I'm off. Look, that's yet another picture of Pete. I actually agree with this one. I think the valuation is very compelling. Again, this pause in demand, I think you could make an argument. They're buying back stock. I think the company's well run.
Karen?
Yes. I draw like a four-year-old, actually. But I agree. I think that the valuation is attractive here. Could it go lower? Yeah, sure, a little bit. But I think it's priced in a lot of bad news already.
Stop. Here comes the negativity.
Stop. Guys, if valuation is the only thing that you guys can come
up
with.
Not the only thing. At 3 points.
I said into this housing recovery, it's done.
You're not
over.
Debating us.
Let me just tell you
you're
something.
You're not debating
guys,
us. Dan, vote and leave.
I just did. And you don't call the shots around here. He does this with Mel, too, Scott, as you know. Here's the deal. I just want to tell you guys
that
if the economy starts to reaccelerate, that means that rates are going higher. And the very reason that you said that the that demand was softening was because of higher rates.
So you're creating a scenario in no way
can housing ever improve, no matter what.
Correct. Right. And okay. if you guys want to lean on unemployment, look at where we're getting these jobs.
Do you not think that these housing stocks haven't priced in everything you just said? I mean, this stock was double this amount a year and a half ago. So, I mean, you look at the valuation, it's trading at roughly 10 times trailing. And again,
listen,
trailing that's not been
this
good.
This is his pitch, first of all. And I just want
to make
a
point. You're the one that went off on a bare tangent on somebody else's fast pitch.
Yeah.
My goodness.
All right, we want to hear from you at home. I want to know if you're buying Pete's pitch for Lennar. You can vote in our poll at CNBC Fast Money. And while you're there, send us a tweet.
Whoops.
Because with all of the market moves, our traders are answering your burning questions tonight. That's right after the break. The Fast Money stocks taking investors on a big time roller coaster ride the last couple of months. So with all of these crazy moves, we thought it was the perfect time to take some tweets. Our first viewer asking tonight, thank you for the questions and the tweets. What do the panelists think of the transports and specifically FedEx and UPS, Karen?
Well, thanks, Gary, for the tweet. I'm long them both, which has been pain for the last 2 days. You had some negative news about the U.S. Postal Service reviewing what that last mile of delivery would be or the end delivery. And then you have Amazon potentially threatening. Do they build their own? All that having been said, though, I like them both. And this e-commerce trend is obviously an enormous juggernaut. And I think they'll both be the beneficiary of that. I like them both right here.
Pete, FDX, UPS, or Tim?
No. Well, go ahead.
Well, I tell you what, I actually bought
not
FedEx
surprisingly,
last week.
Tim.
Well, I knew he had something to say.
The tweet should have been for me.
Tim. I mean,
okay. Yeah, look, bottom line here is I think FedEx, if you think about actually their core business, it continues to actually grow. EPS is accretive. That TNT acquisition is the gift that keeps on giving on Ground Express. I think the Amazon threat is very overrated. And I think a stock that's traded down, just because it's traded down 60 points to then leveling around 225, that's not a reason to buy it. In this case, free cash flow, dividend, great valuation, FedEx.
You want to go again?
Yeah, let's do it. I'll take another tweet.
Our next viewer says,
give one to Dan.
Intel.
Give one to Dan.
Has held up well recently. We talked about this stock earlier.
We did.
Danny boy, coming to you. Is it a good buy? That's
so,
the question.
Listen, I'm actually modestly predisposed to be positive about this. When you think
really?
Of it, had a really bad
Holy
year.
They had to push out
of this 10-nanometer chip. This was a huge issue that had ripples all over the semiconductor world, okay? But these guys are going to be really ground zero if this trade skirmish goes into a big, big war. That's just very clear, okay? So to me, I just don't see the upside downside. The stock had this 10% bounce or so. It's still 15% off its highs. It is a cheap stock.
No CEO.
No CEO. That's probably going to come pretty soon, I suspect. But there's risk to that. I think there's...
shocked how long it's taken.
There's a couple people out there that I think they probably sell the stock if they're in
it. So Dan says he's into it, but yet he's talking it down at the same time.
That was odd.
It's a bit defensive.
It seemed very negative.
It's got a good yield.
Yes,
they buy back billions of shares.
Sounds like you're selling.
I said I'm positively predisposed,
the tweet.
But I see no reason to run out and buy it
okay.
right here.
Okay, thank you for the tweets, as always. Still ahead, media stocks, one of the best performing sectors today, up 1%. The AT&T CEO sitting down with CNBC's Becky Quick earlier today to talk streaming wars. We're bringing the comments from Randall Stephenson when Fast Money returns. Welcome back to Fast Money. AT&T CEO Randall Stephenson sitting down with our own Becky Quick at the Business Roundtable's CEO Innovation Summit earlier today, commenting on the streaming wars.
Disney is launching their direct-to-consumer product. We'll be launching our direct-to-consumer product. We each have significant a lot of content that has been licensed out to other people, not just Netflix, but licensed out to other players in this ecosystem. And as we begin to pull our product together, we're going to want some of that content to put on our platforms. This is going to play out interestingly over the next 3 or 4 years. I think this world is going to change dramatically as we all get into this business on a direct-to-consumer basis.
So with more companies looking into direct-to-consumer streaming services, who could ultimately come out on top?
Well, there's no question that AT&T can. I think Randall Stephenson has one of the most complex jobs of any CEO out there. There's a lot of moving pieces here. And I think the most important thing for the share price right now is actually delevering. I think this is a company that people are very concerned. I think there's going to be organic free cash flow growth. I think they're going to be selling some assets. And I do think that the media business that they have acquired is enormously undervalued. And I think there's a lot of it's a yield play, too. There's a
you
lot
own,
of
I mean, you own T, right? You own the
I
stock.
I own T.
You own the stock.
I own
what
T.
about T, VZ? Verizon. We'll get a lot of picks on our show for Verizon.
Right. I think too many people get sucked into these dividend yields, and that's the biggest problem with some of these names, because once that gets eliminated, then what? And then you look at debt. That's another huge area. So I've stayed away from a lot of these areas.
Totally agree.
Yeah.
All right. Of course, there's a lot of deal talk around AT&T these days. Options traders, though, think that another potential telecom deal could go under, and they're betting against one of the names involved. You're breaking it down for us, Dan.
Yeah, so
options action
there
for
was
us.
Some price action or some options action in Sprint today, which is pretty interesting. Back in April, T-Mobile launched a $26 billion bid, about $662 in Sprint at the time. Today, put volume is 10 times average daily volume. There was one trade when the stock was trading at $5.95 that caught my eye. There was a buyer of 10,000 of the May 6th. Five put spreads, paying a quarter for that. That breaks even down at 575. You make up to 75 cents between 575 and 5. And when you think about it here, we got a couple charts real quickly. We have a 2-year and we have a 5-year. And when you look at this thing and you look at the range that the stock has been in, I think if there was any issues with this deal, you probably have risk down to that $5 level. And let's look at the 5-year pretty much. You know, $6 is kind of important support. So when you think about the political climate we're in, think of the competitive environment we're in, you think of the fact that Sprint is owned 85% by SoftBank, and you think, where's SoftBank get all that money? From Saudi Arabia? Maybe there's some issues about how this deal gets approved here in the States, so this looks like some protection for somebody who owns some Sprint.
All right, good stuff. We'll see you tomorrow on the big show.
OA, right? 5:30, baby.
Full show, 5:30 p.m. Eastern, every Friday, only on CNBC. You can check it out tomorrow with Dan and the gang. Up next, Final Trade. You know what Pete listens to when he's sitting alone in his house?
Scott, I might know.
Oh. That's it right there. Celine.
Yeah.
There
it is.
You're all by yourself.
We're with you. Jimmy and I are with you.
I know you are. Dan influenced everybody once again. All his little minions came out there. Oh, this is never going to happen.
Wow, more than 70%
said. That's okay, Scott. That's all right.
Get out of my house.
Hey, man.
Get off my lawn, get out of my house. 70%.
I'm going to go with Fang, but this isn't Fang. This is Diamondback Fang Energy. I think it's bounced $100 on the buy call.
All right, Jimmy.
So unlike Dan, who's positive then negative on Intel, I'm just positive. Yeah. I like the company.
I said positively, Darren.
Yeah, if you go out long, it's the same as buying it here. Apple, I like it.
XLU, I think you sell it.
Guys, great stuff. Mad Money with Jim Cramer begins right now.
You seek the key. But first, you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.